Welcome to the debate. You know, usually when we think about a system failing, we tend to imagine a broken part.
Right. Like a physical defect.
Exactly. You find the snapped gear, you locate the blown fuse, you isolate the structural fracture, and you replace it. The logic is comforting, right? You swap out the bad piece, and the machine just runs again.
Yeah. Well, because that implies a very mechanical, linear causality. We love the idea of a clear point of failure that we can point a finger at, isolate, and repair.
We do, but then you step into the world of multi-agent complex systems. And whether we are talking about a global financial market, an international supply chain, or, say, a sprawling hospital network, suddenly there are no broken parts.
None at all.
You look under the hood, and every single gear is working perfectly. Every agent, the clinician, the policymaker, the infrastructure operator, they are all making the mathematically correct, locally rational choice based on the information they have. And yet, the machine still tears itself apart.
Which is wild, because it completely violates our most basic intuition of cause and effect. It is, it's the ultimate coordination paradox. You have local rationality generating massive global instability. Everyone is doing the right thing, and the system is still collapsing.
Exactly. And the terrifying part is that it happens all the time. Which brings us to the central question we are tackling today. When a complex system exhibits these early signs of fragmentation, when the gears are spinning but the machine is shaking, how do we actually restore coherence?
Right.
Do we actively intervene through structural design, deliberately calibrating incentives and ensuring signal integrity? Or is coherence better achieved through collective restraint and emergent coordination, a practice of collective wu-wei?
It's a fascinating tension, and it emerges directly from the framework in the field of coherence. The text completely redefines how we should even be looking at systems. I mean, they are not bounded objects sitting on a table waiting to be managed by a CEO or a central planner. They are distributed fields of interacting agents, and each of those agents only carries a tiny partial perspective of the whole.
And that framing really sets up our distinct positions for today's discussion. I will be arguing that because system failure is fundamentally caused by structural distortion and the inability to integrate those local truths, we must actively design and calibrate the field's underlying conditions. Coherence takes work. It requires structural intervention.
And I will be dissenting. I argue that this kind of active design often exacerbates the very instability it is trying to cure. I believe true coherence has to emerge organically through, well, non-interference, minimal signaling, and collective restraint.
All right, so let's start with why a system starts drifting toward failure in the first place. In any multi-agent field, no single observer has the full picture, right? The hospital administrator only sees the spreadsheet of bed capacity.
Right.
The ER nurse only sees the chaotic waiting room. We have distributed perception. And according to the framework, distributed perception inevitably leads to distributed distortion.
Oh, mostly because they are acting on incomplete signals.
Precisely. Each agent is acting on incomplete signals that are then filtered through their own local incentive topology. If the hospital administrator is incentivized to lower wait times, they pressure the staff.
Yeah, and the staff reacts.
Right. The staff, reacting to that incentive, might discharge patients prematurely. Because we are all reacting to slightly warped data and localized incentives, the system naturally drifts toward what the text calls epistemic closure.
That is such a crucial concept.
It really is. Epistemic closure is a terrifying second-order distortion. It's when the system becomes utterly blind to its own blindness. It essentially manages its own perception to maintain a false narrative of stability.
The spreadsheets look great, but the patients are getting sicker.
Exactly. Therefore, my position is that coherence simply cannot just happen organically in these environments. It requires active structural design. We really have to design for signal integrity, perceptual compatibility, and incentive alignment. If we don't, the field collapses under the weight of its own accumulated misinterpretations.
I hear you, but I come at it from a completely different way. The fundamental flaw in the active design approach you are advocating for is what the text identifies as the illusion of oversight.
How so?
Well, you are assuming there is a vantage point, a God's eye view, from which this active structural design can be cleanly applied. There isn't.
Look, I'm not saying there's a perfect vantage point, but there are broader vantage points.
But in multi-agent systems, centralized attempts to calibrate the field inevitably suffer from a lack of complete visibility.
Let's look at the supply chain crisis we saw a few years ago, when multiple agents, shipping companies, port authorities, retailers, all attempt to correct the system simultaneously based on their limited view, their interventions overlap.
They compound.
Yes.
Retailers overorder to compensate for delays, ports change their unloading protocols, and trucking companies shift their routes. This creates destructive interference patterns. Overaction is the real danger here. Every act of structural change you make sends shockwaves to the ecology.
But you can't just do nothing.
Coherence isn't a blueprint you can enforce from the top down. It is an emergent property. It relies on the discipline of non-interference, collective way. Local agents must be allowed to self-organize around minimal coordination signals without the rigid enforcement of top-down design.
I'm sorry, but I'm just not convinced by that line of reasoning. Before we can just declare that doing less is the solution, we have to look at the structural mechanism of the failure itself. In my view, failure is a structural inability to integrate information. The text uses a really precise mathematical concept here, sheaves and obstruction.
Hold on, let's unpack sheaves for a second for the audience. We are essentially talking about how different local departments or agents overlap their data, right?
Yes, exactly. Think of a sheaf as a localized patch of data or reality. Every agent holds a local truth, a piece of the puzzle. In a healthy system, you can glue these overlapping local truths together to form a coherent global picture.
Right.
The ER's data patches cleanly onto the ICU's data, which patches onto the billing department's data. But when gluing fails due to structural incompatibilities, say the ER measures success by patient turnover, but the ICU measures it by recovery time, you get obstruction.
The edges don't match up.
The edges don't match. And without active design to align those edges and remove these obstructions, local truths can't integrate. The system experiences narrative capture, where a convenient, false story replaces actual structural truth.
I see where you're going with this.
Think of the system as a landscape viewed through multiple overlapping warped lenses. If my lens shows a mountain and yours shows a valley, we cannot build a road together. The obstruction isn't that one of us is lying. It's that our lenses don't stitch together. I am just not convinced that simply waiting or practicing non-interference will fix the lenses. We have to actively grind a better lens by redesigning the incentive gradients. We have to mandate that the edges match.
That's a compelling argument, but have you considered the ecology of failure?
What do you mean?
You are treating these warped lenses as if they are a natural, static given that must be engineered away. But failure cascades precisely because of the positive feedback loops caused by our overlapping, conflicting interventions. The warped lenses you want to fix are very often caused by the massive layers of design intended to fix them in the first place.
Wait, how is design the cause?
Because every time you actively redesign a system, you are forcing adaptation. Let's stick with the hospital example. One agent, the administrator, increases control by mandating a new reporting software to align the data. Another agent, the floor nurse, compensates by rushing through patient care to fill out the new software.
Okay.
A third agent, the doctor, adjusts in response to the nurse's rushed care by ordering unnecessary tests just to be safe. Each action is locally reasonable, but together they create an ecosystem where failure propagates.
But that's an argument for better design, not no design.
No, it is an argument for recognizing margin asymmetry. This is a critical piece of the framework. Margin asymmetry means that agents at the bottom of the hierarchy often lack the buffer, the time, the resources, the energy to absorb disturbances. When you try to actively grind a better lens through top-down redesign, you consume what little margin they have left.
You're saying it stresses them out.
You force them into premature defensive action. You pull the nurse off the floor for a 3-day training on the new software. They end up distorting their reality just to survive your new incentives. The active design becomes the pathogen.
Okay, but wait. If you're arguing that we shouldn't intervene because it causes more damage, How do we even know the system is in danger before it fully collapses? If we accept that agents have different margins and that distortion is happening, we need a way to measure the degradation. We can't just fly blind.
Right.
This brings us to the concept of the collective altimeter.
The system's warning radar, basically.
Exactly. Unlike a traditional metric that measures the absolute state of a system, like how much money is in the bank, the collective altimeter measures alignment across agents. It detects divergence, delay, and fragmentation.
Mm-hmm.
When the altimeter shows signal inconsistency across domains, when the C-suite says we are stable and highly profitable, but the warehouse floor says we are in a logistical crisis, that gives us narrative fragmentation. And when I see that on the altimeter, that is not a time to sit back. That is a clear mandate to intervene structurally.
To do what, exactly?
To forcefully align the metrics. It means the current institutional frameworks are actively pulling the system apart. The incentives on the warehouse floor are fundamentally opposed to the incentives in the boardroom. You have to structurally redesign the environment so that those local truths can glue together again. You can't just let the warehouse burn while practicing restraint.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. You are misinterpreting the very nature of the collective altimeter.
How so?
Yes, it detects divergence and delay, but it fundamentally detects a loss of synchronization. And the absolute worst response to desynchronization is introducing new forceful constraints.
Why? If a machine is out of sync, you recalibrate the timing belt. It's basic.
Because human agents aren't timing belts. The text explicitly warns about the compression of decision space. When divergence increases in a system, stress goes up, and the options available to local agents begin to narrow.
Right, they get squeezed.
Exactly. If you react to the altimeter by overhauling the system design, by dropping a massive new protocol on the warehouse floor and demanding immediate alignment, you compress that decision space even further. You corner them.
I see your point about compressing the space, but ignoring the altimeter seems far worse.
I'm not saying ignore it. The altimeter is not a trigger for a structural redesign. It is a tool for awareness. It is a signal that agents must engage in mutual adjustment. They need to reduce their action to clear the noise.
Give me an example.
Think about it this way. If an orchestra is playing a symphony and they start falling out of sync, the conductor doesn't stop the music, rewrite the sheet music on the spot, and hand out new instruments. That would be a disaster.
No, but the conductor subtly guides them.
Right, and the players must listen to each other. They use their margin, their training, their slight pauses to naturally fall back into rhythm. They reduce their forceful playing. They listen, and the synchronization emerges organically. That is collective wu-wei.
The orchestra analogy works beautifully, sure, but only if the players actually trust that the conductor and the other musicians are playing the same piece of music. Because both of us agree the altimeter is showing us a problem that requires a response, we have to look at the invisible thread that makes any response, whether it's my redesign or your mutual adjustment, actually possible.
You mean trust?
Yes, trust.
Absolutely. Without trust, the signals mean nothing.
Right. And here is where our philosophies diverge fundamentally. We often think of trust as a psychological feeling of goodwill, you know? Like, I like my coworkers, I trust them. But in a multi-agent, complex system, trust is structural coupling.
Structural coupling?
Yes. It is the structural strength of the connection between agents that determines whether a signal is accepted, interpreted, and acted upon. If the warehouse sends a signal that they are overwhelmed, does the C-suite automatically act on it? That structural coupling does not happen by accident.
So you think it has to be engineered?
It must be deliberately designed through transparency, accountability, and consistency of signals. If I push a button, the machine must stop. If I report a safety violation, the line must halt. Without a design structure that actively punishes distortion and rewards signal integrity, trust breaks down and the field fragments.
I think that's incredibly risky.
Well, that's an interesting point you made earlier about letting the orchestra find its rhythm, though I would frame it differently. The text explicitly points toward designing systems where action reliably follows observation. How can collective wu-wei, essentially stepping back and practicing non-interference, build the hard structural coupling required to prevent a systemic collapse.
I come at it from a completely different way, because your definition of trust is exactly what destroys it. Trust is not structural coupling forced by a punitive system. Trust is the relational margin between agents. It is the breathing room, the buffer, that allows us to absorb uncertainty and give each other the benefit of the doubt.
But if there are no rules enforcing transparency?
When you try to design trust through rigid transparency requirements and punitive measures for distortion, agents don't feel structurally coupled. They feel managed. They experience what the framework calls managed perception.
What does that look like in practice?
Well, when the C-suite says we have a new zero-tolerance policy for missing inventory metrics to build trust, the warehouse manager doesn't suddenly trust the C-suite. The warehouse manager starts curating and manipulating their signals to fit your design framework so they don't get fired.
Ah, they manage their perception to survive the design.
Exactly. That destroys trust. It creates the very epistemic closure you were worried about earlier. Trust is rebuilt organically through the absolute discipline of restraint. It is allowing agents to hold partial truths. It is tolerating ambiguity without forcing a premature designed consensus.
But that sounds so passive.
Stepping back isn't doing nothing. It is removing the interference so the underlying relational bonds can heal. When agents on the warehouse floor see that their local reality is respected, and that interventions from the top are minimal and proportional, structural coupling rebuilds itself. You have to give the system the margin to trust itself again.
Look, I hear you, but those relational bonds are operating at massive scales in modern complex systems. You're talking about a warehouse and a C-suite, which is maybe a few hundred people. What about a national energy grid with millions of interacting nodes, algorithms, and human operators? This brings us to the ultimate test of these philosophies. Scale and the limits of intervention.
Scale changes everything.
It does. And I will concede this much to you. Centralized, top-down, authoritarian command and control absolutely fails at scale. The information is simply too distributed. The God's eye view is impossible. However, I want to pivot to the concept of minimal intervention at scale. Minimal does not mean passive. It still requires active calibration.
Come on, calibration's just a polite word for design.
But it's a specific type of design. We must adjust the incentive topology. We must intervene through signals to gently guide the field. Look at the concept of Fano-like local structures.
Hold on, let's define Fano-like local structures so we don't get lost in the weeds here.
Right, sorry. Think of them as tightly closed relational geometries. Essentially, silos. A department or a localized network that works perfectly within its own internal logic, but is completely closed off from the rest of the system.
Okay.
At scale, a complex system is full of these closed loops. If we don't actively manage them, these Fano-like structures obstruct one another. The energy traders maximize profit, while the grid operators maximize stability, and because they are closed silos, the grid fails. Minimal intervention at scale means identifying the gradients of the landscape and subtly tilting them, maybe through pricing mechanisms or slight regulatory shifts, so that local optimization naturally aligns with global coherence. It is still a form of active design.
I'm sorry, but I still don't buy that. Let me tell you why. The fatal flaw in your idea of subtly tilting gradients is the problem of simultaneity. At scale, interventions, even the most careful, subtle calibrations, compound non-linearly.
Well, because millions of agents react at once.
Exactly. You tilt an incentive gradient over here to fix a local silo, but another agent halfway across the system compensates for your tilt, and a third algorithm reacts to that compensation. Suddenly, your gentle nudge has created massive systemic oscillation. It's like trying to balance a tray of water by constantly tilting it back and forth. Eventually, the water just sloshes out.
So what is the alternative at that scale? Just let the silos tear each other apart?
True minimal intervention at scale means preserving system optionality. It means making strictly reversible decisions. Often, the highest form of coordination is local agents signaling through their own local actions without creating escalatory chains.
Reversible decisions. Okay.
Right. If the energy traders see the grid stress and they have the margin to pause, they will. The discipline of non-interference is recognizing that you cannot fully predict how your calibration will cascade through the ecology. You have to preserve the pathways and the margin and allow the system to self-correct. When you overdesign, you strip the system of its optionality.
So let's bring our arguments to a point of synthesis, or at least a clarified divergence for anyone listening. From my perspective, we cannot escape the fact that complex multi-agent fields inherently generate distributed distortion. It's built into the physics of how we perceive reality. Epistemic closure, believing our own warped data while the system crashes, is a natural gravitational pull in these environments.
The blind spot just keeps getting bigger.
Yes. And to overcome that relational obstruction, to actually take these disparate, overlapping realities and glue them together into a globally coherent system, we must continuously and actively design the system's underlying conditions. We have to engineer signal integrity, transparency, and incentive structures. We have to grind the lenses so they fit together. If we leave the system to its own devices, local optimization will blindly tear apart global stability.
And my summary is that coherence is an emergent living practice, not a static design that you can simply impose from a boardroom. The greatest threat to complex systems isn't the natural divergence of local truths. It is the destructive interference and oscillation caused by overaction and simultaneous top-down intervention.
The cure being worse than the disease, essentially.
Exactly. True stability, especially at massive scales, requires collective wu-wei. It requires the profound discipline of restraint, mutual adjustment, and the preservation of relational margin. If you want agents to trust the signals, you have to stop managing their perception. You cannot force a system to be coherent by tightening the screws. You can only give it the space and the buffer to align itself.
It is a profound complexity we are grappling with, navigating these shared realities, especially when we acknowledge that no single observer holds the complete truth, is perhaps the defining challenge of our time, whether it is our supply chains, our hospitals, or our financial markets.
It absolutely is. And the balance between necessary structural calibration and vital non-interference is razor thin. It requires an immense amount of humility. There is so much more to explore in the material for anyone trying to navigate these fields.
Exactly. It forces us to ask a really difficult question. When you look at the perfectly turning gears of a failing machine, do you reach in and forcefully adjust the mechanism, or do you step back, preserve the margin, and let the machine find its own rhythm? That is the ultimate question of the field of coherence. Thank you for joining us on The Debate.